This episode
is good.
It's something else. It got me emotional, but only the second time I watched it.
I only watched it once, but I too got a little emotional over it.
It's weird. I think it's just kind of the culmination of a lot of things, and this just happened to hit at like the right moment for me.
Yeah.
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 For those of you who don't know,
to be alive. Yeah.
I was going
to
say, we're recording this on Inauguration Day.
We are, and I have spent my day actually watching like a news channel again for a day that was not an election day, so that's been very strange. And it's just like open glee on the part of news anchors is really fun.
Yeah, isn't it wild? But
it's weird that they're not even pretending to be objective. Yeah.
But even though it is substantially positive news for us and for, I assume, most of our audience, at least.
Mm-hmm, I would guess so.
It is still overwhelming, and so emotions kind of run high. So when I was watching this episode again, I was, as soon as they started hugging in the very beginning, I was like, oh no.
Oh no. See, for me it is the end.
Yeah.
Which we will get to, because we need to discuss this entire episode.
Yes.
Because why do we need to do that?
I don't know, what even are we talking about? Should we tell people?
Well, we probably should. Welcome to Pizza Toast, which you've already been listening to for, like, what, a minute and a half?
I hope so.
This is a podcast about Babysitter's Club adaptations. First the Netflix series, now the HBO series, and then we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
My name is Christy Admiral, and I have a last name this week.
I am Phil Gonzalez, and I have had a last name this whole time, but you didn't know.
Well, there you go.
It's secrets.
And this week we're going to talk about the last episode of the HBO series. Sniff, sniff. Mm-hmm. The Babysitters Remember, which is the same name as the Super Special, but it is not at all that Super Special.
No, the Super Special 11. And that's a Super Special that is the babysitters flashing back to things that they've never really talked about. It's just sort of like aspects of their lives that kind of fill in some gaps that you may have been wondering about as readers.
Yeah, and barely any of the stories feature multiple of the sitters in them. Just the I know there's one about Claudia and Marianne and Christy when they're eight.
Yeah,
that is the only one I can think of that's like truly overlapping, and that has nothing to do with them being babysitters.
This is a flashback show to clips of a season that didn't exist.
Yes, it's not played in the funny community way of Paradise of Human Memory. It's more just like, hey, remember that babysitting job that you had? And at least one of these is from the books.
Oh, I mean, they're all
of them?
They all represent.
I think all of them are.
Except maybe the tea ceremony?
I think the tea ceremony is invented, but it is also a culmination of everything that the character of Mimi is.
Right.
In the group. And there are a lot of Easter eggs, as you pointed out when we were discussing this, that are just kind of blink and you'll miss it.
But it's funny because they're flashing back almost exclusively to books from the beginning of the series. And so most of them don't involve Jesse or Mal. So they will state a memory, and then Jesse and Mal will both go, what? And then they'll have to explain.
It's really funny to see them left out over and over again.
Except for the flashback to Too Many Babies, which I think is like book 51.
Yeah, it's later in the series, because Christy's memory that she shares is the first book.
Yes, and it's the first moment that you might remember if you watch the Netflix series. Like, that's the scene from the Netflix series, just sort of like whipped through a little bit faster.
It's always funny.
Yeah.
I mean, finding out that your babysitting job is for two St. Bernards who are locked in a room, like the buildup of everything she says makes it sound like she's imprisoning children and that it's dogs is very good.
Oh, I was thinking of the flashback to her moment in class where she has to write the essay on decorum. It's the decorum essay.
Yeah, no, we also have that, because like Christy's two memories are both things that occur in the first book. And her first memory is the one that where she leaps up to her feet at the end of class, which is incredibly rude. And this one, I actually think they do a better job of framing how rude that is.
Right. But before we get to that, we have the beginning. We have The theme song writ large, we hear the whole theme song over an extended, not even a montage, it's a scene of the babysitters cleaning out their locker on the last day of, I assume, eighth grade. This is it.
I'm guessing eighth grade, yeah.
Yeah, and you and I talked a little bit off mic about the fact that this really feels like the end of the series.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
They were writing toward this, which is like, everything is ending. Like, throughout the episode, we're reminded over and over again, they are not spending the summer together. Mm-hmm. And the Babysitter's Club will all but cease to exist during this summer.
And unlike the book, I mean, they've had like 17 summers in the books. Like, they just...
Yes.
The books, for those of you who aren't readers, the books initially started off in seventh grade. They cycled through the mm-hmm. school year. They hit summer. They came back for eighth grade. And then they decided not to age the girls anymore. So it just cycles through the year over and over again in perpetuity, but it's always eighth grade. Like they hit summer. They come back to school. They're in eighth grade again. It's like The Simpsons. The Simpsons pointed that out several times where like they mm-hmm. never age. And that's what happens in Babysitter's Club. You get full years, but then you always get reset back to eighth grade. It's really weird. You and I discussed at the beginning of this series, at this whole like podcast, the desire to see someone actually map out the length of time, Groundhog Day-wise, that actually
I'm
takes
place.
I'm
still interested in doing that just because I don't know precisely when it happens. I feel like it is whenever somebody feels like writing a summer story, they have to reboot, right? Mm-hmm. And like so many of the super specials happen over the summer. So that's a few right there. It's so... It's so many. And so this seems to be the end of the eighth and sixth grade years, respectively, because we do also see Mallory and Jesse cleaning out their lockers. Mm-hmm. And the things there everyone's cleaning out of their lockers are really intriguing objects.
And direct references in many cases to books from the past. Not episodes, but books. We start off with Stacy opens up her locker and there's a map of Manhattan. Like a roadmap of Manhattan. There's a photo of a limousine. And I was trying to remember.
I was trying to figure that one out.
I assume there's a book where the girls ride in a limo, but I couldn't remember it.
Probably.
I don't know. But she has an I Heart New York shopping bag. Mm-hmm. And then pressed flowers in the yearbook. Was that a reference to something? The pressed flowers?
I'm guessing that it was a reference to some boyfriend or another, because we have to have something that indicates that Stacy's really into boys. This series has never acknowledged that that's a big part of her character.
She should have opened the locker and just all these phone numbers poured out.
I mean, I would have preferred the visual. Yeah, she kind of smiles at it. Like we cut to Dawn has photos in her locker that she's taking down.
Mm-hmm.
Marianne and Logan are kind of palling around in this one briefly, which is nice.
Yeah, they give each other a big hug at one point. It's very sweet.
I wondered if they were going to kiss, but they did not.
They did not. No, that is strictly against the rules in junior high.
Clearly they can't do that.
Christy is wearing a baseball jersey in this scene, and her locker is full of flyers. She has the Babysitter's Club flyer.
Need a babysitter, save time flyer, mm-hmm. which is like, that appears multiple times in the books. Like, it's a very familiar phrasing.
Yeah.
And that was the first time I was like, oh, I love this. I love what they're doing here.
She has ping pong paddles hung up, which I think that's a reference to one of the books. Her playing ping pong. I could be wrong.
Play it at the big sleepover at the lock-in.
Oh, because they do mention a few of those massive events in this one. What are the K+ badges? She has these badges.
That's when she ran for school president.
Okay. Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah, because I was like,
we got something there. Yeah.
This is vaguely familiar. And then she pulls out the autographed softball.
Mm-hmm.
Which was a huge part of the part of the big fundraiser for the for the kid.
Yes.
They explicitly mentioned later on in the episode. Like, mm-hmm. it's like Christy opens her locker and it's just like reference, and it goes by fast. It's like 5 seconds and then that bit is over.
This episode feels a little bit more like it is. I mean, this whole series has been for book readers, right? But this one it doesn't really hit you over the head with it, but there's a lot more of it than there usually is.
Claudia has a flyer for her disposable comestibles art show.
Mm-hmm.
Which is represented in the Netflix series in a way. Yeah. She does it. She does it, but not exactly the same way she does it here. It's a lot fancier in the Netflix series.
It's very sophisticated
but,
in the Netflix
But you
series.
See the flyer, and I was like, wow. And it's not even clear. Like, you just see, like, Comestible and, like, a mm-hmm. little bit of the title, and it's blurry. Like, they went full on. And then a photo of Mimi, who will become a player later on in this episode.
Yeah. Mimi has never been mentioned, or she has been mentioned in passing, but she's definitely passed away at the beginning of the series. Like, we never meet her.
Right.
So they had to find a Mimi for this episode, and find one they did.
Now, the locker that got me strangely choked up was Dawn's. Because,
interesting.
Because she, there's photos of surfers. There's a Valentine from her secret admirer.
Yes.
And there's a like a California license plate that says Sunshine on it. And that's Dawn's father's nickname for her.
It is. It is. Which is very sweet. And I did notice that right away. And that, and Dawn has been has such a special place in my heart after watching these two shows. So I like any time that she is spotlighted, I'm very happy. And that's, it's a quick thing, but it's a meaningful thing.
Well, we never meet Dawn's father in this series, and
no.
But we got a reference to him last episode where he sent flowers. And then she opens the locker, and there's this license plate that I'm like, oh, she keeps a full license plate in her locker just to remind her of her dad. Like, it's got his nickname, and it just made my like heart leap. I was like, oh, every time she opens her locker, like, there's her dad.
A lot of dad stuff going on stuff. These last couple episodes. Yeah.
Well, it's a show for people who love dads. What can I say?
It is, apparently.
Mal has this giant banner that says, "Who needs 'em?" And I was trying to place what
nothing.
The
Got
banner
nothing
was.
For
couldn't
you.
Get anything.
I'm sorry.
More. A giant smile button. And she and Jesse have given each other like best friend awards.
It's a little much, but I'm glad they love each other so much. My the detail I like here is the Jesse handwriting is book Jesse handwriting.
I'm gonna just say the attention to detail in this first segment is astounding,
especially like, given that it's like a minute long. Like,
yes.
It is not, I don't know that it is long enough to warrant this much attention.
But and again, like, this is okay, so we talk about like The Simpsons always talks about like pause moments. Like, there's moments in The Simpsons that go by too fast. You have to record the episode in order to get it. This is definitely done for the benefit of the people who bought the videotapes. Like, you if you caught this on HBO, you weren't gonna catch these references that fast.
I'm not going to catch anything of this. Yeah. So it does all go by so fast.
Because if you were watching this on HBO, you were just a casual fan anyway. If you didn't buy this VHS tape.
If you didn't rent this VHS tape from Officer Video like some of us did.
It was just one episode per tape too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really obnoxious.
It wasn't it? Yeah. I remember
back
in the day when you would get at most two episodes of a show on VHS, and it cost you $24 if you bought it.
Yeah, I had one. I mean, I think I had a single episode of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on a VHS tape.
Yep.
That showed that there's not enough content there. I should have gotten more from my VHS, but no.
Was it Teenagers from Dimension X? That was the one all my friends had, and none of us wanted to watch that one. So
no, it was Sky Turtles, where they have a blimp.
Ooh, the one where Donatello builds the blimp.
Yeah, of course he does, because he does machines.
But he doesn't just build a blimp. He paints it with their, like, color scheme and their name.
Yeah, it's very unsubtle. Is our next podcast a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles cartoon podcast? Because I'm not mad about that idea.
Boy, oh boy, you get to those later seasons, and it gets pretty difficult. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and there are so many incarnations. This is important. This is important. Babysitter's Club.
Babysitter's Club. Hey, there's been Ninja Turtles references in the Babysitter's Club. So
true. One of the few. I mean, like, this is my thing that I always go back to, where there's so many pop culture references to very, very old things, but occasionally we'll get a newer thing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm reading New York, New York right now, one of the super specials.
Yeah.
Because why wouldn't I be? And there was, of course, an I Love Lucy reference. I was like, ah, yes, this is the Babysitter's Club I know and love.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
I had to show Mitzi an I Love Lucy segment, because they directly reference it for some kids do it for a talent show. And I was like, oh, you've never seen this. You have no idea what they're talking about. It was the one where Lucy takes the vitamin.
That was the one that Dawn was talking about. Too,
okay,
the vitamin to Vegemin. Yep. Yeah,
And
was that in the Sixth Grade Follies book?
Yes.
Oh, what an upsetting book. Okay.
And but Mitzi laughed herself silly watching that segment, so still holds up.
Interesting.
Still holds up.
Evergreen. Yes.
Lucille Ball fans out there, Nicole Kidman fans out there.
What a bad casting choice.
Is it? That's what they said about Michael Keaton as Batman. Anyway.
Anyway, yeah. The scene ends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we also
with them all being like,
and as they're running out of the school, Alan Gray comes running up to Logan and like puts his arm around his shoulders. It's really quick, like blink and you miss it. But I'm like, wow, there it is.
There's a bit of Alan Gray in this episode because we get a pretty good bit with him later in the episode.
Yeah,
but because
we'll get to it.
Too many baby stuff is good. But yeah, they're all so glad that summer is over and they're all going to have, of course, a signature Babysitter's Club sleepover.
Yeah, and this is kind of goodbye because they keep talking about the fact that, like, Jesse's going off to ballet camp, Christy's going to softball camp, and unlike in the books, there's no plan for them to, like, meet up somewhere. This is just...
No, and there's usually a contingency plan for the Babysitter's Club to keep going.
Yeah.
But it seems like they've kind of dispensed with that here. Like,
right.
It really sounds like Marianne is one of the only people who's staying put. Stacy says something about going to New York. Like, there's just a lot of divergent paths here.
Right. The Kilbournes get mentioned at one point. And yes. So you know that Shannon's floating around somewhere. Probably upset somewhere. She didn't get invited to the sleepover. But who knows? She's probably babysitting for her own siblings tonight. Yeah, Christy's going to have softball camp. Marianne's sad. And Claude is all, we should like trade something so we don't forget about each other. In my mind, I'm like, a pair of pants. A magical pair of pants that fits all the girls.
Have you read those books?
I've read all of those books.
I love those books. I've even read like the We're Adults Now, But We Still Have to Talk About Pants book. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah.
Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants are like the anti-Babysitter's Clubs in that they are never together at the same room. That's never. The whole point of the books. they have these separate adventures.
I adore those books. Yeah, so... Marianne is sad in this episode the entire time.
Yeah, yeah. Why wouldn't she be? She's never going to see her friends again.
That's true. Never again. Once they're in high school, they're all just going to split apart, right?
Like, that is what happens with friends.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I definitely didn't hang out with my middle school friends in high school. There were more kids to choose from.
I did, though. I had a couple of carryovers.
I was a floater. I did not care for high school or middle school. But anyway.
I mean, I made new friends, but I kept the old.
But you kept the old because one was silver. Because one is silver. And the other gold.
It's words to live by.
I was in brownies. I know about this.
So this is and this is where we get the. Also, we are about 1 minute into the episode.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, that's okay.
But front end's loaded. The front end's loaded.
Yeah, it's so like the framing device we get is them just reminiscing. There's not really any more to it than that. I mean, we kick off with Christy having her great idea.
Yes, and she's wearing a tank top the whole time that looks like it just says sport. On it.
I love it.
But it says Sport Shack, and I tried to find the Sport Shack, but you're probably not surprised to learn there's like a billion places called the Sport Shack.
There's a lot of places called Sport Shack, but yeah, she's wearing, it's like almost a jersey, but not quite.
Yeah, yeah.
And
she got it at the Sport Shack.
I mean, it is a good depiction of the scene in the book where she is just incredibly bored waiting for class to end.
Mm-hmm. She's also incredibly old because this is flashbacks starring our older actors now.
Yeah, this is supposed to be the beginning of seventh grade, but she is she's looking as old as she ever has in this series.
Right. they try to make her look younger. Like they kind of like hunch her over and she's like,
yeah,
they cast like the tallest man as her teacher. but that actor, the guy who plays her teacher, Mr. Redmont? I don't remember. That actor is funny. He's funny.
Yeah.
He treats. He's good. Yeah.
He assigns her the essay on decorum.
Mm-hmm.
She has to pretend she knows what decorum means. So you know she's going home to look it up. And we get this book's version of the "I can't find a babysitter for David Michael. If only it were easier to find a babysitter" from Liz.
Yes.
And then I believe Christy just like bolt upright
yes.
says a babysitter's club, which is really
I good. Believe she says something like, "What a great idea." Or
she does.
One of the girls says it later on. But Liz Liz comes in and sits on the bed, and it's just one setup, like one camera setup. There's like a couple of close-ups of their faces, but this actress, the actress who plays Liz, same actress as before. She's very cash. She's so cash. She's like leaning back on the bed, and she has like her foot up in a really weird way. And I'm like, this poor actress was given like no block. Like, just sit on the bed and just get comfortable. You're in your daughter's room, but it's awkwardly blocked, and I was like, she's wearing like her work slacks. I expected, like,
yeah, she does not look comfortable with this scene.
She's doing that thing where you like lean back and you hold one knee and you kind of kick one leg.
The thing that nobody has ever been comfortable doing, right. And yet your body feels like it should be doing it anyway. Mm. Yeah,
yeah,
they have their little conversation.
Yeah.
It's mentioned that Sam has math club, or yeah, he's going to math club, mm-hmm. and therefore can't watch David Michael. A fun wrinkle in Sam's character that I did not recall. Right.
That's probably what Mom calls math tutoring.
Math club.
We signed you up for a math club.
Stacy would be in math club,
right?
Maybe he's in math club to get to Stacy. Doesn't matter.
Maybe. I think he bridged that gap.
I put it all together.
Claudia gets the wonderful line, the little Claudia detective work, where she goes like, yeah, if it hadn't been so hot that day and you hadn't been writing a paper and your mom hadn't had so many problems finding a sitter, you would never have had your great idea. And I'm like, wow, that's like a massive a whole lot of things, I guess, had to come together to decide that people need...
There are a lot
need...
of steps she had to take to have that great idea.
I'm like, Claudia, it probably would have just happened. Like, the mom would still have needed the sitter.
Christy's always having those great ideas. So.
Right. It would have happened. But it shows you how tenuous causality is. How if that butterfly hadn't flapped its wings, we never would have gotten the Babysitter's Club. This whole thing could have become a Fear Street for all we know.
That was the direction they felt they were going in after the Phantom phone calls, but no.
I do wish there was...
We got back on track.
Or maybe there was. I don't know. I haven't read the whole series. Is there a book that is like, what if we had never started the Babysitter's Club? Like,
kind of.
Oh, good.
book 100 is called Christy's Worst Idea, and it's about maybe the Babysitter's Club shouldn't exist, which is a good book.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think you'll like it. It has a special shiny cover.
That's the one actually that Mitzi is looking forward to most. Yeah, she can't. She's counting down to book 100. It's her big one.
Excellent Abby content in that book, as ever.
Good, good, good. So that's book one gets covered, and we get
because there's also the Buffy and Pinky thing,
right?
The dogs.
And which as you mentioned is delightful. We've never really seen that portrayed in live action. So these dogs are large and intimidating.
It's quite cute.
Yeah. And we get a brief reference to Stacy showing up for the first time and joining the club. And Marianne mentions that Stacy was so sophisticated. Mm-hmm. And
it's a way Marianne has always felt about Stacy, mm-hmm. in part because of Marianne's like encyclopedic knowledge of New York and mm-hmm. her kind of fixation on it. I mean, this is a theme that is revisited in every adaptation, because like, Marianne is really into Stacy's sophistication in the Netflix show, too.
Right. Because Marianne always felt a little childlike to herself. And
in these first meetings of the club, she is wearing, like, they did bring back the pigtails, which I was really excited about.
I was excited about it, but also, like, they've been working so hard to try to make the actress look young in these last few episodes that it kind of just came across to me as that. Like,
yeah, that's true.
It's getting harder and harder, and now they're trying to make her look 2 years younger, and it's like, but again, it is canon, so...
It's canon.
And
so these are the memories that these are the first couple of memories that do not involve Jesse and Mallory.
Right. They do. Jesse and Mallory make a remark though about the having to
the
take
tests.
Yes.
Yeah.
To get into the Babysitter's Club.
Which are cruel.
It's horrible. It's horrible.
It's really mean.
Feeds into your dislike of Book Christie a little bit.
Oh, she could be bad. I mean, I'm coming around on her. I think you're reading the books now. I don't have quite the same level of disdain as I once did. But she can be a jerk. It's part of her character.
It is part of her character. She tries a little too hard sometimes.
Yeah.
So we get the first meeting of the Babysitter's Club. They're all excited. The phone rings and they all scream. And that's where we get the flashback to...
Yeah, that's where the dogs are.
To the dogs, Buffy and Pinky. which, you know, if you hear those names, your first question should be, are these dogs?
They're just willing to accept anything at that point. It's early on in the club.
We get a reference to Betsy Soback, who caused Claudia to break her leg in Claudia and the Bad Joke, which is the book I cringed my way through most of all. If you've never read it, Claudia babysits for a kid who is constantly pulling practical jokes. Somehow pulls a practical joke with a broken swing set. Claudia flies off the swing set. In some way that like breaks her leg in 9 places. Like, it's all of a sudden you're reading this Babysitter's Club book and then Claudia's like, I was laying on the ground like bone shards sticking out of my leg. And I was just like, oh God.
It's rough. It's rough. And I mean, I think the title of that book is Claudia and the Bad Joke.
Yes. It is a bad joke.
It is a bad joke. Also, who's like, who sees a swing that's probably broken and sits on it?
Who can swing with enough force that anything that happens to the swing set breaks your leg? You're like, I'm swinging so hard. I know I can take it. And then
yeah. So Claudia broke her leg once.
Yeah.
Is this where the snobs memory comes in?
Well, first they mentioned Buddy Barrett going missing.
Yes.
Which is a
thing that's extensively covered in the Netflix series.
Yes.
It's just a Mrs. Barrett being absent-minded and forgetting that the dad is coming to pick him up that day.
And we've met the Barretts. They're good kids.
Yeah, they're great. Buddy is one of the better kids on this show.
Yeah. And then we get the Christie and the Snobs reference, which is...
Yes.
Because in each book, as we've noted, there are parallel storylines. Mm-hmm. So even though it's Christie and the Snobs... It's about Christie dealing with her own set of snobs, but there's this other set of snobs as well in the book.
Yeah.
There's Christie's snobs, and then there's the little kid snobs.
And the little kid snobs, everyone had trouble with them because they were brats. And the kids, they got to act as the kids in this. Oh boy, are they obnoxious. This is a bit where Stacy... like kind of gives them a taste of their own medicine. They're talking about how they like a messy room and they won't clean up. Mm-hmm. So she starts messing up all of their things. And it is really gratifying to watch. She takes a stack of construction paper and just starts throwing every piece around.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good.
It's their example of reverse psychology. That's what happens in the book. They
And it works okay.
It seems okay, I guess. It is one of those things where if it hadn't worked, the parent would be very upset.
Yeah, that was what I was thinking. Like, if this doesn't work, then you have a mess on your hands and you haven't had time to clean it up because you were doing it theatrically as an example.
Also, you've been like really weird and mean to those kids and then they're going to complain about you to their parent.
I think I've had one bad review from kid to parent ever in my babysitting career, but it does tank you for that family in the future.
Oh, yeah. They don't want you back. Yeah, and then that's the Delaney family, Amanda Delaney and Max Delaney, and then they move away in Babysitter's Little Sister number 19. So we don't deal with the Delaneys for very for very long. Let's see what else. They go to Ogo. This is where all of a sudden the babysitter's like, "I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. Let's go downstairs and get some milk." And they all head downstairs in their nightgowns, and Claudia is searching for cups, and she accidentally comes across some old teacups and is reminded that once upon a time she had a grandmother and that this grandmother was named Mimi, and things get very somber and flashbacky.
And the flashback is how many years long this time?
It is the longest segment. Okay, if I had to decide whether or not to watch the dance from the last episode... or the tea ceremony from this episode, I'm gonna go with the dance because at least it doesn't have Christie acting culturally insensitively to an old Japanese woman.
Yeah, so we get some bits where I'm a little uncomfortable with the accent work Avril Hillman is doing.
I'm a little uncomfortable with the Japanese music the score suddenly turns
to. I was going to ask you how you felt about the stinger being like a gong at the beginning.
There's a lot, Noelle, the whole score is like, bang, bang.
It's really bad.
Like, oh, it's still in the 1990s. We're still learning, aren't we?
And, like, there's a lot of talk of, like, Mimi basically kind of speaking in not quite platitudes or, like, slow. Like she said kind of goofy things sometimes.
Right.
Or, like, they sounded like the morals of fairy tales. And they talk a little bit about that.
And you have the girls doing their impression of Mimi at some point. Which
I don't like it.
Which I understand is done in, with affection. And they all knew her. And they're doing their impression of her. But it does sound a little bit like a bunch of white kids talking like Japanese people in a cartoon.
Yeah. It's okay when Claudia does it.
Right.
That's fine. But... That's because Claudia is Japanese American.
Right.
So,
Yeah. So we get this flashback. Mimi had a tea ceremony for them. As you asked, where'd they get all those kimonos?
So many kimonos. They're all wearing a kimono.
I assume they're Mimi's. I assume that she has, like, kimonos from her life.
Christy can't put on a kimono, apparently.
Yeah. Apparently they left her alone in the room to do it.
Yeah. Dawn looks... like, very natural in a kimono, by the way. I just want to put it, like, everyone looks kind of, like, they all look cute.
Mm-hmm.
Dawn has, like, chopsticks in her hair and that sort of thing. Like, it's very, very good.
Yes. And you have to acknowledge that none of this is culturally insensitive, since Mimi is obviously the person who let them wear the kimonos and had them do this.
No, it was definitely her idea to do this. She's telling them about green tea and different kinds of tea, mm-hmm. and she used to drink barley tea, which sounds not great, but she makes it, like, I mean, she makes it sound delicious.
But then Christy comes stumbling in her half-on kimono, being like, what the hell's all this? I can't get this stupid thing on. Ugh, what's this? And I'm like, Christy, chill out. Like, it's just a kimono, and you're just going to sit down and drink some tea.
Mimi fixes her up and, like, takes it well, but I would not take it well. Especially, like, I don't know what your grandparents are like. My grandpa, at least, did not suffer fools. Like I just... It's a weird thing. And then we find out that Mallory has good luck, which doesn't seem accurate.
So I am currently reading to Mitzi Mallory Pike, number one fan, which I believe is the book that made everyone turn against Mallory.
Rough.
It is such a rough book that Mitzi started yelling at Mallory when I was reading it to stop being so stupid. Quote, I'm 9 years old, I'm younger than you, and I can figure this out.
Well, like, that is a book that is about Mallory not being able to tell the difference between fiction and nonfiction at different
points. It's a book about Mallory getting angry at a middle-aged woman because the middle-aged woman wrote comedy books, even though her parents and sibling died in a fire. Her husband divorced her and her child died young. And Mallory discovers this and gets angry at the author for not writing about that in her books and calls her a fraud.
Yeah, because Mallory read the Hemingway quote about writing what you know and took it like in the most literal way possible.
And so she has this theory that real writers write from their life experience. Good writers do. So if you didn't, you're not a good writer. You're a phony.
Yeah. It's lucky that Henrietta Hayes lives in her town in the first place, because she lives in Stony Brook. Why wouldn't she? Even luckier that she gets hired on as her assistant. Luckiest of all that she can set her straight about all the lies she's been telling.
Yep. Mallory really is lucky, isn't she, Mimi? Thanks for the tea. It was well worth it. I do want to say that Mimi is played by an actress named Hiseo. I don't know how to pronounce this, so forgive me, everyone. Hiseo Asai. She is only credited as being in the Babysitter's Club as Mimi. However, there is a woman with her name who passed away in 2014 who had a husband named Woodrow Wilson Asai, who was a Japanese man, World War II veteran, who was also in movies. He was in Zoolander as the Prime Minister of Malaysia.
Oh.
He was in the Sabrina remake as a Japanese businessman. He was in Other People's Money as a Japanese businessman. He was like, he was one of those actors, and I'm assuming that they were a couple who, because mm-hmm. she was from New York. They were a couple who lived in New York and did like some extra work when it was available, and that she just got the role of Mimi because she was available and she was there.
Around. Yeah.
And it's her only like on screen acting role. Like she's appeared in stuff, but I actually did some digging and like was like, oh wow, like these, like her. I found her like her church's announcement of her passing, mm-hmm. which was like very, very beautiful and. Assuming this is the same woman, but the clues seem, I'm doing a little Dawn work here.
Yeah, I feel like that lines up.
And
yeah.
So I just want to say that she's good.
She's good.
She's good. She looks like Mimi.
I remember you and I both during the Netflix series were like, this Mimi looks too young for us.
Right.
And
we're picky
and
about
our Mimi. And this Mimi is the right age. Mm-hmm. She has the right demeanor. She speaks in such a way that it's like, yeah, this sounds a lot like the Mimi from the books.
Yeah. I actually bought her broken English a little bit more. It sounded less acty than the Netflix Mimi.
Oh, it definitely does. I think there's something about the writing of the Netflix one that sounds too deliberate, mm-hmm. whereas this sounds like somebody who speaks English as a second language read the script and interpreted it as such, which
right.
I like about it. And I would like this scene more if it weren't. It just crawls along because of the Christie stuff.
Yeah.
I do like the little explanations of tea, and I like that Mallory's the only one who has good luck because of the steam that's rising from her.
Right.
Tea.
But they mention the time when Mimi goes to the pizza place with them. And
yeah, that's the talking, the bad, yeah.
But they tell that story, and I'm like, I want to see that story. Like, why didn't you act that one out? Like, that involves all the babysitters. You have the pizza place. Like,
it sounds so much funnier, because that's the story of, like, she's going to take them to a fancy Japanese restaurant. It's closed. They all go to a pizza place.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end, Mimi announces best Japanese food ever, which is great.
And I was like, oh, I would have loved to have seen them do that, because I get that they wanted a scene with Mimi that has all the girls in it. Mm-hmm. Because it would have made a lot of sense to do, like, Mimi, you know, helping out Marianne in one of those moments, or Mimi having a heart-to-heart with Claudia. Like, Mimi was a huge part of these books, and but I get that they wanted, like, a group scene, but this one was just kind of dire after a while.
It's a lot. It's a lot. Especially after the other ones have just been, like, quick bites. Even the Christy having her great idea is pretty brief. Mm-hmm. Like, that's pretty pared down. And, of course, the sitting jobs are just kind of, like, in and out.
Well, as one of the girls says, oh, Mimi, she sure had some doozies. And didn't she ever? that's our last word on Mimi. She sure had some doozies. I want to believe that someone said that at her funeral.
Somebody to say that at my funeral.
I wanted to say that on my grave. Sure had some doozies.
Sure had some doozies.
Then we get a flashback to a scene that I totally forgot about, but which was David Michael and Karen getting married at Christie's big day, where we see like all the cousins who only show up really in that book, played by actors.
Also walking down the aisle with Karen. Headcanon, is that Nancy and Hanny, who are like her two best friends?
They're not credited as such in the credits.
Yeah,
because we get a credit for Luke, who is the minister, cousin Luke. Even though he's not named, there's no credits. We get a credit for Catherine Fielding of the Fielding family, who are there.
Cousins, yeah.
but yeah, they don't credit anyone else. So if that's your canon, then that's canon.
I mean, so all through the Little Sister series, Karen has two best friends, and they also come up in like the Shadow Lake book and that sort of thing. Because they are the friends that she would take with her on vacations and this sort of thing. Nancy and Hanny. Nancy Dawes, who is not a book character, but Hanny is Linny and Hanny Papadakis are
big characters.
Clients. Yeah, they are charges. So yeah, this is a, I mean, this is a cute scene. We get like some Karen theatricality. And then once they realize they have to kiss each other, they both run screaming.
It's right.
Pretty cute.
I do think it's funny because even when I read that book originally, I was like, and it's line for line, the book.
Yeah.
I was like, that's cute. They're going to be step siblings in a
they're
few,
gonna be
in
step
a few
siblings.
Minutes. It's fun that you're making them kiss before the wedding. I guess like get it out of the way now because it's going to be weird in a few hours, kids.
David Michael doesn't break a glass this time, which is, you know.
He does run off, though.
He does run off.
He runs too, off, yeah. And it's very fun. And it's cute to see that acted out. And this is where we get a flashback to a book that is a great book and an extended flashback with multiple scenes that basically acts out aspects of the novel Too Many Babies mm-hmm. that we only hear about.
I loved it. Yeah, because... There are definitely specific characters that get more of a spotlight in Too Many Babies than others. Like, the marriage between Christy and Alan Gray is explored a little more. I don't like that we don't get to see him naming the baby Izzy, because I thought that was the cutest thing in the book. But we do see Dawn and her husband having quite the argument about the baby. Dawn losing the egg briefly. Because, Too Many Babies is the book where they are assigned husbands, or yes. wives in the boys' cases, and given babies in the form of eggs that they need to keep an eye on at all times. They also need to, like, pretend to bathe them and feed them and care for them.
It's your classic flower baby scenario.
It is. And Logan and Marianne are matched up in this.
Right. And we learn a lot about relationships in it. We learn about, like, their ability to tolerate each other. But Dawn gets this husband named Aaron, who we don't see much of them in the book. They mm-hmm. sort of flit in and out. We hear about them because Marianne narrates the book. It's right.
Yeah.
It's Marianne. So she just sort of mentions, like, they had a problem doing this, and this happened to them. But the flashback chooses to focus on them. And so we meet Aaron. Like, we meet, like, full-on actor playing Aaron Albright. There he is, Mr. Richard Blake himself, known for this episode of television.
He's not bad.
He's not.
I mean, I was way more excited to see Alan Gray again, but he's not bad. And, I mean, they have a fun, goofy dynamic where... She doesn't want to name him what he would like. He would like to name the baby Skip. She hates that idea, mm-hmm. which I think it's cute. I mean, I like that some of them ultimately give them very silly names.
Yeah. And they lose the baby. We see Dawn toss the egg into her backpack. She's just like,
it made me so nervous.
She's like, I'll take this, throw. And I'm like, that's. Literally not how you treat an egg. That's like the last.
He showed her, and like they showed her before putting it in an inner pocket in like her windbreaker, and that seemed way safer. But Aaron was like, "Oh no!" And then the bag, just tossing it in there, totally fine with that.
Toss it in your bag. That's egg care 101.
That's how I take care of a baby. Yes. Yeah. Oh, and. In the meantime, also, Logan and Marianne are having an argument about how often they're both going to take care of the baby egg or egg baby. And Logan's from the South again.
That's right. He suddenly has an accent again.
And I like their argument because it is a very couple-y argument, which makes more sense than some of the other dynamics.
Right, right. There's a lot of things in this that work. I mm-hmm. kind of wish this whole book had been adapted into an episode.
I wish this had been an episode because this is actually one of my favorite books in the series. Like, I like Marianne. She's never a standout for me, but that book is particularly great. They watch infants, mm-hmm. which really, when you do it for the first time, is the most harrowing experience of your life, at least in the babysitting realm. And they've got the egg baby plot is just always funny.
Yes. And like you said, we get to see some great Christy and Alan Gray interaction.
They butt adorable. Heads in a really delightful way.
Oh, we also see Claudia and her partner, who I don't remember what his name is, but she's painting their egg because she wants it to look beautiful.
And it's non-toxic paint.
And he just looks, he looks into it, you know? I mean, if Claudia is your partner and you're just going to nod your head and go along with whatever she says because you're in junior high and it's like this beautiful woman who's like your partner. Yeah. So he's not going to disagree.
I mean, that's true. That is a true thing of Stacy and Claudia. We are told in books, not narrated by them, but narrated by the other girls, that they're very popular with boys.
Yes.
And again, they, like they are more, they really are more mature and more sophisticated than a lot of the other girls in their grade. And they are more interested in dating boys than most of the others. So
Claudia is interesting because she, in the books, she's regularly worrying about the fact that she doesn't have a boyfriend, but she also seems to like transcend that. Like she's that friend of yours who you can't even imagine dating someone because they seem so like above and beyond all that. Like I had a friend in college who was an artist and a musician and everyone was friends with her, but I found out that she was dating one of the guys on my, in my dorm. He's like, oh yeah, we started dating. And I was like, what? Like, she's just dating someone, like just like a normal person. That's so weird. I thought like she would like have to tap into some like otherworldly power in order to find like an appropriate partner. But no, she was just dating some guy and it just blew my mind.
But it's true. Like she sometimes goes on a few dates with one guy, but it's never presented as this is her boyfriend now. Like both Stacy and Claudia date Pete Black at different points, but that just means like going to a movie with him or going to a school dance with him. She does go out with Trevor Sanborn a few times. Like it's not just the fixation that she develops like in the second book, but
And it's one thing that I like about these books is that it shows a group of friends who are each at different places with dating and have different ideas about what, like Christy has a guy who's kind of her boyfriend, maybe not, but they're like just together. Like, and Marianne has like a boyfriend and they are together, but Stacy and Claudia just kind of date around and none of those options are shown as being more or less valid or healthy or unhealthy. It's just like people have their different desires and their different wants and their different needs from like dating. And that's cool. Like, that's fine.
It's presented better than in some like older YA novels, I would say. I like it. Yeah. This is our last extended memory, I believe.
Yes, we get a reference to Jesse learning how to sign and Jesse's secret language. We talk about the Zuni pen pals.
Yeah.
From the big sleepover. That's what they mentioned. They mentioned Mrs. Kilborn. They had to rescue Mrs. Kilborn's necklace and Watson's books. That's a book where they're trying to get stuff together to sell to take care of the Zuni kids. And kids are trying to best each other with stuff to sell, and they start stealing stuff from their parents that's worth a lot of money.
Because why not?
Because why not? And I think that's that, and then that's it. They're all having a sleepover, and we get the sort of gut punch of, you know, well, they're like, let's always be friends forever. And then one of the girls is like, we're probably going to move away. Like, I don't want to live in Stony Brook my whole life. How are we going to be friends after that? And they're like, we'll write to each other, maybe. And then they're like, let's make a vow to like always get together. Once a year, we'll get together no matter where we live. Even if we have kids, we'll even if we're in Paris, we'll all find a way to get together. And they're like, yay, which is kind of that thing you do with your friends.
I was going to say that's a vow everyone has made. Like it's different time lengths and it's different commitments, but it is a thing that is not going to happen. Like when you meet somebody at summer camp, you guys are best friends for a week and a half. And then you say at the end, I'll write you every month or every week, or it doesn't happen. Like I've had a few of those persist, but they do eventually fall away. And there are seven of them. That's never, it really is never going to happen. And it's sad.
And I think that pact is the reason it feels like the last episode. Because,
yes.
Because any adult knows that's a weird kid way of saying goodbye. Like, we're never going to forget about each other, right? And you're like, this is the end of the line. Like, they're going off to high school now. They're not going to hang out with Jesse and Mallory anymore. Like, they're in seventh grade. Like, that's not something that high schoolers do. And, like, you're not friends with every friend you had in eighth grade. Like, that's just, you change.
And this is the part that got me, though. Like, this is when I started feeling.
Yeah.
All of the feelings of the Babysitter's Club kind of foist upon me every now and then. Because, like, them all then saying, like Claudia asking if she can borrow some of Stacey's things after they're trying to fall asleep. A lot of, I'm never going to get to sleep at this rate. Like, lots of giggling, all lying in a row in their sleeping bags.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, it's very classic, like, it's classic Babysitter's Club conclusion, and it's all very sweet, but really bittersweet in this case.
Yeah, and I appreciate it for the way it made me feel, because it is that, like, that feel. Like, I had friends, my best friend in eighth grade, that was the last time I saw him until Facebook was invented years later, because his parents got divorced that summer, and then he moved away, and that was it. Like, and I was like, I got to high school that year, and I was like, what happened to so-and-so? And people were like, oh, he moved away. Because we didn't talk much over the summer. We were kids.
Right.
I didn't even know his parents got divorced until, like, it happened and he was moving away. And, I mean, that's what happens to kids. And you're upset for a few weeks, maybe, and then you move on with your life, because life is fast and memories are short. The Babysitter's Club.
Yeah. they say goodbye to their friends for the very last time, and we never hear of most of these actors again.
Isn't that weird?
It's really weird. And I don't think any of them are bad at acting. I think they're all very good at this particular thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it does also feel like these were never girls who, like, set out to be actors.
Right.
Like, so it's, yeah, in a way it's sad. But also, like, what if this were the one thing on your resume? Wouldn't you be happy with that?
I would be thrilled. Like, they, until the Netflix series came along, they were the Babysitter's Club. Yeah. Well, I guess the movie came along. The movie, I guess, supplemented this for a lot of people.
Sort of. But I would also say, like, these girls are way more implanted in my memory at, like, because of the duration.
Yeah.
Also because of the legacy, in a way, because I still thought about this show, like... And if you ask somebody who is a fan of the books who is about our age, or, like, in our general, like, let's say, like, over the age of, like, 30 or so, they're going to remember this show. Like, the movie is a great blip on the radar, but I don't know how many people, like, really would cling to that.
Hmm. So when you think of watching this show when you were a kid, this series, like, where did you watch it? Like... In the living room,
I didn't have HBO.
Okay.
But I did have the Disney Channel at different points in my life. So when it reran on there, I could watch it. I watched a lot of this show in hotels because, okay, like, fun peek behind the curtain. I am from Michigan, which, if you talk to me enough, you'll eventually find out. You might find out really quickly. And I was born on the east side of the state and lived on the west side of the state most of my life until I moved in, like, 2012 to New York. I would visit the east side of the state once or twice a month and often stay at a hotel overnight to visit my grandmother.
Mm.
So I, like, the Courtyard by Marriott was a huge part of my life from the ages of, like, 6 to... When did we stop staying overnight? Like 13 or so. So I watched a lot of HBO in those times. I saw more than my fair share of things that I should not have been seeing. But I would also, like, wake up early on the Saturday mornings to watch the Babysitter's Club. So that's what I remember. And, like, those are my clearest memories of this show. Prior to this, when I've just, like, been, like, curled up on the couch with my laptop being like, hey, it's time for another day with my 7 best friends. And I remember thinking line deliveries were goofy then, but not really knowing how to pinpoint that.
Yeah.
Like, but now it's like, oh, everything about this show is so endearing.
I, of course, didn't watch this, and this was my first real exposure to it, except for the one time I tried to watch an episode a few years ago, and I was just like, what is this? and all I knew about this show going in was that everyone who talked about it was just like, oh, yeah, that's the bad show. That's the bad Babysitter's Club show. And everyone was just like, this is a bad show. Bad acting, bad costumes, bad direction, bad cinematography. Like, it's just bad. And so I was expecting nothing. I was expecting, like, a goof. And and a lot of Babysitter's Club blogs came out in the early 2000s, like 2000, 2010s, that ragged on this show a lot because that's what the internet was at that point. It was like, let's make fun of terror, like things that we were fans of when we were kids. But looking at it with just like my eyes, my like old man eyes that I have, as just like, what's this TV show? I'm just like, no, this was a solid show. It wasn't always the most entertaining thing you could be watching, but it was really carefully thought out and obviously made with a lot of love. And I find it fascinating that it's this pop cultural moment that these seven girls got to encapsulate for a year, 2 years,
maybe
3 years.
We don't know. I think an interesting thing about it is, like, you can say that it's bad all you want. You can do that. But I would challenge anyone who's saying so to contrast it with the comparable shows on Nickelodeon and the Disney Channel at this time, which were not good.
Nope.
I mean, like, there's a party, not a party necessarily, like there's no such thing as a Zoom party actually, but like there's an event that I go to every once in a while called TV Party.
Uh-huh.
That is like thrown by a local group and we all watch 90s sitcoms together, sometimes 80s ones. They're not good.
No.
This show, for all, like, and it's not perfect, for all it's supposed, it's not really trying to be funny.
Nope.
It's not trying to be edgy in any way. And it's also not that over the top sweet or treacly. Like, it's just a nice, wholesome show. And it really, it's like been a bright light in my viewing when so much of what I watch is more dour.
Yeah.
Or like more self-serious. It doesn't take itself seriously, but it is also not like it's not laughing at itself. It's just,
no.
It's just nice. It's just like a nice warm hug. And I liked it a lot for that reason. There are a few episodes I might go back and watch again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Boybeaters, tell me you don't want to watch Marianne and Dawn fight again. Like,
they're amazing. Anytime Dawn gets really emotional, like angry, I'm like, I'm there for it.
She's so mad sometimes. Yeah, it's like, I'm very glad that we did this also so quickly after watching the Netflix show, which is, it smacks of this era so strongly.
Yeah.
And I don't know, like, this one obviously has some, like, late 80s, early 90s hallmarks, but it feels more timeless to me.
What's funny is, assuming this show actually ran between 1990 and 1992, assuming that, from our detective work, that was the case, this show
It seems right.
What?
It seems right.
This show ran smack dab in the middle of the run of Saved by the Bell, which is a TV show that was going for the same basic demographic audience.
Mm-hmm.
A show that can only be appreciated ironically, only be appreciated for the garbage that it was, like,
mm-hmm.
and that it wasn't trying to not be. It was trying to be hip and cool and funny and ironic. And I mean, as the recurrent sequel series has pointed out, it was an awful show about awful people. And
it's a bad show. I've seen every episode at least 3 times. It's a bad, bad show.
And
this is, this is so much better.
To think that the Babysitter's Club came along and Scholastic was like, we're going to make essentially like a contemporary of this kind of show, but we're just going to make it about real people and try to make it about people who care about each other and aren't trying to scheme and wheedle. And the closest they ever came to it was the Count on Court episode with like the two brothers who were like, may have stepped out of an episode of Saved by the Bell. Because they were like mini mafiosos. But
It's so strange. Yeah, it's strange that this feels like a relic of a different time, while at the same time, I can't really put a date on it.
Yeah.
And I like that about it.
And I would say the closest we have now is probably the Netflix Babysitter's Club show. Like a show that's not trying to be super cool. It's trying to be sincere, but not treacly. It is trying to tell these kind of stories, which I'm like, oh, right. That's what the Babysitter's Club books were. They were this. They were trying to entertain you, but also make you feel comfortable with these people and show you how human beings work. Is they have troubles and they're not perfect and they get mad at each other, and there are ways to solve life's problems that aren't necessarily dramatic, but and do involve some work, but that are realistic. And so kudos.
And like, I couldn't give them letter grades against each other like this in the Netflix, because I think they are both so good in their individual way.
Yeah. Yes.
Man, this show gets a check plus from me. Like, I'm in on this show.
So I guess I hate to say it, but that's it for the Babysitter's Club HBO series. This will be the last time we somewhat ironically say goodbye to our friends.
Yeah, this is our final farewell to our friends. And
yeah, to these specific friends.
Yeah.
Because
yes,
this isn't the
end
of
Pizza Toast.
There's
always more. Come on.
I mean, this is a podcast about Babysitter's Club related media, and there's still some more of that.
There sure is. So, I mean, ruminate on that because there is some of it, but we're gonna maybe take a little bit of a break here between things.
Yes, we're gonna
adaptations. Yeah,
we're gonna take a little time off just to sort of like get ourselves back in order and figure out what we're doing. But we're not done.
Oh no, definitely not.
No, there's more Babysitter's Club to talk about. I mean, eventually we'll be like talking about the calendars, but it's all out there.
I'm opting for Chain Letter next. The Ooh. Babysitter's Club Chain Letter, a single book. But yeah, so maybe a few weeks, maybe something like that.
Yeah, we'll let you know.
Yeah, for sure. You'll update the feed. I trust you.
And in the meantime, where can our listeners find us?
That's a great question. You can find us on Twitter at Pizza Toast Pod. It's just twitter.com/PizzaToastPod for those of you who don't use Twitter. I don't know what I'm saying. And we are also on Gmail at PizzaToastPodcast@gmail.com. I might make a Facebook fan page, maybe someday. I guess I have the time. It's not like there's a lot else going on in the world right now. But in the meantime, that's where we are.
Yeah. If you listen to the show and you enjoy it, leave us a review on Apple Podcasts.
Please.
I know it's not the central hub of all podcasts anymore, but it's the only visible reviews we can really like check out.
That's true. What is the central hub now?
I don't know. Google Podcasts. I don't know.
Google Podcasts is not great either. Yeah. I mean, listen to us on Spotify.
Yeah.
Listen to us anywhere you want to listen to a podcast, to be frank.
Right. But let us know what you think. There's a dozen and a half Babysitter's Club podcasts out there. I feel like we're part of a little group. We're around. So we'll be back.
Yeah.
Are you ready to say goodbye to our friends?
Yeah. Let's say goodbye to our friends.
Goodbye, friends.
Goodbye.